Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. I hope all's well wherever you are. Things are ready to roll here in Studio 66. Coming up, Ike Taylor, Colleen Wolf, who knows who else, from the world of pro football. Seated to my immediate left right now, from the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Oakland Raiders, the radio voice of the Los Angeles Rams, and of course, a proud alumnus of UCLA, it's yes. Maurice Jones-Drew, everybody.
Straight out of Oakland, that's where he's born and grown. Drafted by the Jaguar, addicted to the end
zone. That's enough. All right, he's addicted to the end zone. I that's my new thing, cutting it off. We don't have time for all that.
You know what's funny, Shaq?
Tell.
There's a ton of people here in Los Angeles that thinks I'm from L.A. They don't know I'm from Oakland. I'm from the Bay Area.
That is interesting.
Because they all just remember me from my college days. They just never, and then I played high school ball out here. I played a couple games out here. And so I was like, oh, you're from L.A., right?
I mean, you do kind – yeah, that right? is kind of in it. Well, you know, people came to know you when you broke out at UCLA. In fact, as I've told you before, I remember your breakout game up in Washington against the Huskies.
Got after him.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, oh, that's cool. He does the Jones-Drew thing. And I remember them explaining that. That's really caught on. That's kind of your legacy in a way. You're the first guy to do that, right?
Yeah.
All right, listen, let's talk about football. And first of all, and we'll back into the larger issue, and I promise we're not going to devote the entire show to talking about kneeling or not kneeling and all that kind of stuff. But I do think it's something that I'd like to get your opinion on. But let's start with the football end of things, because when you say the Bay Area, then I think of the East Bay and your guy Marshawn Lynch and how that team played in our nation's capital. Coincidentally, I guess, since that's where the guy who started this whole mess was making his statements from. But I was talking to David Carr, to name drop, on Monday night, and Ike Taylor, and said, "Don't you think that? Do you think that all these losses? Because it was a super weird week three.
Yeah.
How much did all the consideration of what we should do as a team or as individuals with the protests and everything else? How much does that shade the performances we saw on Sunday?
I think some people just." You know, I was talking to David as well, and I kind of asked him, like, how long did the Raiders take in order to decide what they were doing? And, you know, he was like, they wanted to get everybody's opinion, and they were doing all these things. And still, at the end of the day, they have to go out there and play. Now, that may have been, like, 2% of it, but Washington just came out and beat them. You know, it's week three. It happens. You travel cross country.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to make too much of a, like, wash away that whole
but
week.
But I think sometimes as a leader, it's always good to hear people's opinions and then kind of consider those. But sometimes as a leader too, you also have to say, you know what, this is what we're going to do, and then we're done with it, right? In football, you have to eliminate distraction. I think obviously what President Trump said inflamed everyone, had everyone up in arms. But I feel like with that, we still lost the message of why Colin Kaepernick started doing this.
What would Maurice Jones-Drew advise with the Jags or the Raiders or anyone else?
Shaq, to be honest with you, I'm a lone wolf. I try not to let people get into my political views or how I see things, because those are my views. You may have your own. I feel like I jeopardized my career. We were playing Green Bay in the preseason. The Ferguson shooting just happened. Michael Brown just got shot. And right before we left, I hugged my three boys. I had my nephew and my two sons. And as we got on the plane, I just felt weird, right? Because they're watching, you know, we're watching the news, and as much as we may not think that our kids are watching, they're watching the news. And my oldest one goes, "Dad, what happened?" So I had to explain to him what happened. And for me, as someone that they look up to, I felt like I had to go out and show some. So I did the hands up, don't shoot after I scored. Now, it wasn't taken kindly into that organization at the time. And, you know, I played the next week, got hurt, didn't play well. And that was the end of my career. But I would have never wanted my career to go any other way. I'd rather it end that way. And so for me, as a leader in the locker room, we have to decide, are we going to be on – what side of history are we going to be on? Are we going to be on the side that stands up for what's right? Or are we going to be on the side that kind of tucks their tail and hides? And so I'm never going to be the one that tucks their tail. I'll go out – if it's just me, I'm going to go out by myself. I'd rather go out and take a knee to show people I stand for something than to not stand for anything.
When you take a knee or any or what Malcolm Jenkins or Chris Long putting his hand on Malcolm
Robert
Jenkins'
Quinn
shoulder,
does it every week. I mean, it's a lot of guys.
It is taking a pro equality. It is taking a patriotic. Well, nothing more patriotic than the First Amendment and free speech.
But it's not like it's the Third That's Amendment. It. It's not one. Like it's the 15th Amendment. It's the first thing they wrote down. And we're saying you can't do it. It's wrong.
All right, let's talk about some pro football here.
Thank you for letting me get that out too. That's been on my heart
from you. Yeah, no. Now let's talk about week three here a little bit and review the Jaguars with an shall we start there? That is your team. Yeah. What is going on? Why are they so much better? And specifically Blake Bortles. Why does he play better in London than he does on his home field?
No, I don't think
is
it's
there
that.
Some weird pressure that he feels now when he's in Duval County?
No, I think it's crazy because the expectation for the Jaguars, they go up and then they go down each week, right? So there wasn't much expectation week one against the Houston Texans. It wasn't much. They go out and play well. Now the expectation is up here. And then they play the Titans. And then it's just like there's just so much pressure and there's so much riding on it that he doesn't play well. So now the expectation is back down here. You play the Baltimore Ravens. Then you throw four touchdowns. Like, it just, to me, it seems like they have to find a way to keep the expectations not as low, but not as high either, right? Because he feels that pressure, and he feels like he has to win games. And they did a great job against the Ravens, throwing the ball on first down, running guys off, checking it down to Fournette, and really calling. They called a great game, and he managed the game like he's supposed to. When they got in the red zone, they targeted their biggest target, Mercedes Lewis, 6'6", 270 pounds. I mean, that's the guy you want to target because his catch radius is so high or so wide that he can catch pretty much anything.
Three touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, Shaq, the reason I said that
on Yahoo.
I know you
always love Marseille.
Well, I said it on Yahoo because I knew we used to run this play in college all the time, that it always worked. We'd come out in that, like, goal line personnel, and then we'd shift Mercedes out wide. And depending on if they took two guys out there or one guy out there, kind of determined what we were going to do. It was a two-call play, so it'd be like power. It's a 36 power check fade, or fade check 36 power. So the quarterback would wait to see if Mercedes had one guy or two. Because there's no one that's 6'6 on the defense, unless it's a D lineman. If he had the one guy, if he had the thing we wanted to see, he threw the fade out there. If he didn't, we turn around and run it because now we have the box count to run the ball. It's very simple. And so to see the Jaguars do that shows me that they're moving more in that creative mindset to use their players in their position. Because when you lose Allen Robinson, that's your biggest red zone target. Mm-hmm. So now you have to go to the next one, which is Mercedes. And then defensively, I mean, the defense, they weren't on the field at all. I mean, they were literally getting three and outs, pick here, pick there. They were harassing Joe Flacco from the very beginning of the snap in the running game. So hopefully they can keep that going. They have a tough task this week, though, against the Jets, because that Jets defense showed up last week.
All right. Let's not
I'm sorry.
Crazy about the Jets. About what
they did. They did. Let's, I mean, they shut down the
Cutty?
Ajayi.
Oh, I think
that's what I don't – I mean, Cutler, we were on Fantasy on Monday, and Matt Money Smith said, you know – this isn't the week to start Jay Cutler because all the expect he's like Blake Bortles, the expectation's high, so he's going to do the most Cutler thing and start throwing picks. Obviously, he does that.
Who's going to win? You know, the NFC South is a fascinating division. The NFC East is as well. But all of a sudden, if you look at it, the AFC South, I think the Texans are going to end up. That was a great showing in Foxborough in spite of the loss. But Utah, I mean, the two defenses, the Colts – I mean, I guess they're not completely even irrelevant in this conversation, but ultimately I think they're your fourth place team. But Titans, Jags, Texans?
So for me, I feel like the Titans have it because we talked about it last week, the exotic smash mouth. It's not supposed to work in September when everyone's fresh. It works in December. Hey, Colleen, it works in December and in November and December. And so right now their running game is working. You ran down Jacksonville's throat 2 weeks ago. Then you end up running down Seattle's throat, one of the top defenses in the league. So now
– who called that one? Dave Damischek.
You did? See, that's the thing. Like, it's hard for me to see those type of things because I'm so blinded with my hatred towards the Titans. And I'm just playing. But I really don't like them. But
you shouldn't like them. Right. And that's what – you talk about what fans want to hear. They want to hear that you guys don't like your division rival.
I don't. I'm just speaking from an analyst standpoint now. The Titans are set up with Adoree Jackson and the special teams, the way he's able to break a game open if they don't hold. Their defense is – they're okay. You can win with that defense. But I think that that offense, they're, Mariota's starting to hit his stride, and they're running the ball. And so
yeah, but that's got to be a difference maker in games against the – I mean, I don't want to get crazy about where the Jags are headed this year, but they are – the formula is, you know, as old as time, but they are – I mean, really, piece for piece, maybe the – I don't want to say
they're the best defense. They are.
Maybe.
They have – I mean, think about it. The one
piece for – whoa!
Is that how you come in? You got to get your chair. Oh, my goodness. A former figure skater turned NFL reporter. Below average height, 3 inches shorter.
That's enough. I've heard it. Oh, hey, here she is, everybody. She's the host of Good Morning Football, the Saturday, the weekend edition, the pregame show. I always game day first. Is that what it's called?
It's not game day first anymore. It's just game day morning. It's all game day morning. One happy family.
It's like NFL media.
Right. Exactly.
I don't know what all that means. Okay. Here she is, everybody. It's the Wolf, Colleen Wolf. What's the poop, sis?
Oh, you know, just hanging out, moving.
Are you? What was that? It's a mansion.
A two-bedroom, 800-square-foot mansion.
In the sky.
I was just about to.
Oh, I see.
The Wolf, I love my Pittsburgh Steelers. You know I do. I ride with them. You know, I have for many decades now and will continue to. But I'll tell you, I can't jive you. That the team from the other side of the state is winning my heart.
Jake Elliott.
I mean, how great, first of all, do you know that the play-by-play, the Spanish play-by-play guy who called that, it's on the Sheck Report, by the way. Go track it down on your favorite digital platform. That the play-by-play guy who called that, he's, si, señor, si, yeah. Señor, si, señor. His name is Ricky Ricardo.
I know him.
Do
from,
you?
Yeah, from my time working in Philly. He's a great guy.
Is he?
Like Ricky Ricardo off of the...
I Love Lucy.
I Love Lucy. Yeah, that is so funny.
I know, right?
Maurice, what's the funniest movie you've ever seen?
The funniest movie? Mm-hmm. It's tough. I'm going to have to go with Life, though. I love Life.
Oh, yeah. You've
Life
to...
or Harlem Nights?
It's nice.
Because Harlem Nights was the very first movie where they put like all these comedians, obviously African American black comedians together. Like it was Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy.
Oh, that's awesome.
But it wasn't that
Red
funny
Fox.
Though.
It was hilarious.
It was all right. It had its moments.
Sunshine. That's the funniest thing ever.
I do have to see Life already. The Wolf. I'll say.
You never seen Life?
I've never seen it either.
No. All right, I'm about to leave you. You guys are killing me.
Have you seen The In-Laws with Peter Falk and Alan Arkin?
No, I've seen Wedding Crashers though.
Wedding Crashers is good. I love Airplane.
Wedding Crashers is overrated. Wedding Crashers is funny for the first 20, and then the rest of it's like, what's this?
What about Airplane?
Romantic
I've never
comedy.
Seen that.
Oh my God, it's
never
funny.
Seen Airplane, Maurice.
I don't even know what that is. That
it's
never
really
that's never
really
been.
Funny.
You'll like it very much.
Is it dry humor? Or is it like over the top?
No. Did you ever see Naked Gun?
I've seen Naked Gun.
And do you enjoy that?
No, because that's over the top.
Well, it's the same thing.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's over the top. That's too much. It's like they're doing too much to be funny. Wedding Crashers, I can actually see myself like crashing a wedding and coming up with a scheme of things. That's what's
Have you never crashed a wedding?
Exactly.
Before?
The first 20 or so are fun, and then after that, it turns into this weird
romance.
Owen Wilson romantic
yeah.
thing. Like, why? What do I? I didn't.
But the
sign
grandma's
up for all
the
this.
Best, though. The grandma's the best in Wedding Crashers.
Oh, also the breakout performance of Bradley Whitford. Hey, so, just to round it out, The Wolf, you can jump in here if you wish. The AFC South fascinates me. I think the Texans – so the Jags maybe do – you know, if you look at the 11 people out there, maybe that is the best defense. But if it's not, the Texans might make a case as well, even though they gave up 5 touchdowns to the GOAT and everything else. By the way, how about the nails throw? How about that?
Oh, my God.
How about that throw with Jadeveon Clowney hitting him as he throws the ball?
How do you let that happen as a defender? Like, you're supposed to be – you know they have to score. Like, that's the thing that kills me. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
Situational football is dead right now in the NFL. And it's because of college. They don't teach these guys situational football. If you understand there's 30 seconds left and they have to score, they're out of timeouts, right? I'm literally going to play outside, and if anything, I'm going to bat the ball down and let you get another shot at it. But to sit there and sink and think like, oh, this guy can get – like, no. To stay there, is the corner supposed to sit back and sink and make him throw it into a tighter window, and he doesn't know that.
I hear you. I just think, as I keep saying to people – That feels like only something a Belichick coach player would figure out. Like you're not going to make that. You're not going to make that decision to interfere in that situation. And why didn't they just shove him out of bounds? Because that's a lot. If imagine the DB shoving him out of bounds.
Yeah.
You have to. Somebody would have to advise you on that in advance. You don't just maverick that move.
That's the end of the game. I had Tom Cable, Eric Bieniemy, Carl Durrell. John Embry, who's now the assistant head coach for the Niners, and they taught us situational football. Mm. That's what we're – Dino Babers, the head coach for Syracuse, was on that staff. They taught us situational football, and that's what we were supposed to do. Like, that's part of learning football is that in these certain situations,
right.
You have to understand how to play this. They don't do that in the NFL anymore because it's like, well, we pay you. You should already know that. But these kids that come out of college, out of these spread offenses, they don't know because they're not taught anything. They're just told what to do. And so I think – that's what's hurting our game is it's simple. The Texans, you're right, they should have won. I love Deshaun Watson. Now,
mm-hmm. He looked good.
My brother-in-law told me about him a long time ago. I didn't believe him. But this guy is taking the Texans. They found their quarterback, and they have a great chance to win.
The QB whisperer knew about Deshaun Watson.
Who's that?
I'm the QB whisperer.
Oh, you are.
That.
You're,
that's
you're
right.
One of the many?
There are a lot of phonies, the Wolf. There are a lot of people who want to wear that title, but Damashek
right.
owns it. Too late. Get your own. Listen. Deshaun Kizer, Deshaun Watson. I made it quite clear well in advance of the draft that those are the two guys.
What about Mahone? You didn't say Patrick?
I didn't say Patrick Mahone.
No.
Right. So maybe he'll – well, he hasn't done anything yet. We don't know. Maybe
he's not going to play for another 3 years.
Doesn't look like he's getting in there this year. The Wolf, answer the question. Is it the Texans ultimately that win that division?
I mean, the fact that they were able to go into Foxborough and play the game that they played kind of makes me think, yeah, I think that they're not the same team.
Moral
that
victories
was week one.
The Wolf is talking about.
Yeah, but also that Patriots defense gave up 400 yards to a rookie quarterback.
Well, the Patriots.
And they gave up like 500 yards to a quarterback that didn't throw the ball down the field.
You know what? We've just stumbled into something. Are the Patriots, did that throw by Tom Brady, great as it was, and it does, you know, the two sides of it are this. No matter what else ails, whatever flaws the Patriots have, 12 will ultimately be able, more often than not, to pull them through and win the big game. That's what we saw, that personified in that last drive. On the other hand, if you're glass half empty, if Cooks drops that pass,
yeah.
Whatever. Clowney gets there a beat earlier and knocks that ball away. The Patriots are 1-2 and 0-2 at
right.
home, and the defense has gotten housed now twice. And even in New Orleans, that game got sideways and, you know, turned the Saints one-dimensional, and they're not a great team anyway. We might be talking about – are the Patriots – so it leads me to this. Are the Patriots quietly not some impregnable juggernaut this year, Marie?
I'll say this. That throw by Tom Brady –
it's awesome.
Hurts them more than it helps them.
Oh.
And I'll tell you why. Because when you win – and I know people say Bill Belichick is, you know, he's one of those guys, he doesn't take wins and losses, he wants, it's how you play. And he is right there. That defense has played horrible for 3 straight weeks.
Mm.
They should have, the Saints shouldn't have done anything against them, what we've seen obviously against Minnesota. They allowed a rookie running back to go off. They allowed a quarterback and Alex Smith not to do. You allow a rookie. They for some reason they aren't, and they're trying to figure out what it is because they bench Malcolm Butler, and they're trying to figure out if it's the DBs, if it's the D line, whatever it may be, it's not working. And when you win games, and you we won one, so we'll be fine. We'll go back instead of like changing personnel. We'll go back and we'll tighten some things up. It's gonna come back and bite.
Not
you
with Belichick though. Coach.
So when I picked Andy Reid, when we were talking with Heath and all that, the one thing he said is, well, Bill Belichick will find a pass rusher. You can't – passers don't grow on trees. Like, you have to know how to rush the passer. Like, you draft those guys in the first round because that's what they do well. And so that's the issue, is that they don't have anyone that can affect the quarterback in the defensive front. And now you're letting these guys have all day. Think about what the Jaguars did to that Texans offensive line.
Yeah.
How did this guy throw for 400 yards at that offensive line? Right?
And,
even
and
the
they
Bengals
have Dwayne
did
Brown, who's still holding out.
When Dwayne Brown gets there, that will be another difference maker for the Texans. I think they win, but I think the Jags are not a bad team. I think that defense makes them relevant every week.
Yeah.
And I think the Titans, it's hard to argue against them at this point.
Yeah, that's a good division.
What about the Patriots, though, the Wolf? Concern level. Put yourself in as though you care about them. You're desperate to see them win another ring. Are you concerned?
Well, if I actually care about them and I'm a Patriots fan, I really don't have any worries in the world. I don't have any cares in the world. But
you shouldn't. And by the way, that is the correct position. You've won plenty. You can't if you do all of a sudden go 6-10 this season, Patriots fans, you don't get to complain. You've had
Tom
a nice
said
run.
It best, though. He doesn't care. He cares about the next ring. It's not the
I know.
Last one.
Yeah. I know. Well, I know deep down he's ultimately going to get it. And I can try and argue again. He's going to end up getting it. But still the Wolf.
But that's
they
a great
could be
point
1-2.
That you bring up. He doesn't care about the last ring. Imagine if the Patriots didn't have that amazing comeback and they lost the game. All we would be talking about is how the Patriots did not look the same. And how think about that first half of the Super Bowl and how the offense couldn't get anything going. And we're seeing some of those same things in the first 3 weeks.
That's 80-ish something points in 2 weeks that they would have had.
Right. That's what I'm trying to tell you. When you win, it masks some of your issues, your failures, your ugliness.
I agree.
And so they keep winning. It's going to come back and bite you eventually.
I mean, also, he threw 5 touchdowns. But.
We found our point of connection in the funny movie business there with Coming to America, didn't we? There,
that's one of my favorite movies.
That's always a good one.
So low.
You may remember him best as Joe the Policeman from the What's Going Down episode of That's My Mama. Put your hands together now. For Mr. Randy Watson.
Sexual chocolate, everybody. I did that celebration.
The other thing is, too, about that, it's the same issue I have with the Steelers up in Chicago. The fact that they go to overtime, like, oh, play here, and Mike Tomlin with his platitudes as usual after the game, like, well, we own this loss. We got to get better from it, all that stuff that he always does. Like, you shouldn't even have gone to overtime. You should have lost by double digits. They should have made a field goal, the Bears. That should have been a touchdown at the end of the first half. That wasn't a fumble by Jordan Howard at the start of the second half. You should have gotten it. You were in the game undeservedly. All right, let's get to it now, shall we? It's one of our favorites. It's time for the Q&A. Actually, you want to hear from Mike here? All right, here he is, our check-in with number 24, talking about specifically what happened in the protest with Villanueva, the rest of the team, and that generally lackluster Steelers performance. Here he is, Ike Taylor.
You're listening to David Damashek.
Here we are in Studio 66, and joining us now, seated to my immediate left, 11 years, a quarterback for the Pittsburgh
12. Don't shortcut.
12? Why did I have 11 in my head? I'm sorry about
that. It doesn't sound better than 11.
It's number 24, everybody. It's always a good time when he's in here. Certainly better than it was on Sunday in Soldier Field. Ike Taylor, what's the poop, fella?
What's up, Shaq?
Well, I'm feeling down in the dumps, but I'm not. I'm certainly not surprised by what I saw. I know we talk about this every year, Ike, and now we have to talk about it again.
Right.
What gives? Why, for 11 years, can Coach T and Big Ben and the rest of the guys that wear that uniform not perform well on the road against bad teams?
Chicago is a good team, Shaq. And we talked about this earlier throughout the day. Like, they barely lost against Atlanta. You saw what Atlanta did last week. If the young man scores off the punt block, it would have been a totally different story. A few penalties, they would have scored twice anyway. We couldn't stop the run game, point blank, period. And I'm going to keep saying this, man. Coach John Fox, he keeps getting the short end of the stick, but Carolina, they had a mean run game with the defense. Denver, a mean run game with the defense. He doing the same thing in Chicago. So we looking at Chicago of last year. Let's not look at Chicago of last year, because what you did last year really doesn't matter. It's what you're doing now and come forth. The same thing with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, you saying Chicago Bears is a bad team. I think you asked me this the first week. I don't think Chicago, just like I'm going to say, I don't think Cleveland is a bad team. Like, yeah, last year they were bad. Chicago this year, they're not bad, Shaq. Cleveland this year, their record is bad, but they're looking better than they was last year. So, it's just the expectations for the Pittsburgh Steelers a sky high. And right now, they don't really hit on all cylinders until late.
All right. Fine. But I will say, there was a window there, as those early games were winding down, where it looked like, wow, the Steelers have a chance to be 3-0. The Ravens have already lost a game on Sunday. The Patriots are looking at 1-2 now, 0-2 at home, and then all of a sudden Tom Brady does his thing. Steelers are 2-1, Patriots. This is why the Steelers are probably going to have to play in the wild card round while the Patriots put their feet up and rest up in the first round of the postseason. That's where this sort of thing comes back to get you.
Well, I think if Le'Veon would have played the whole game, the turnout might have would have been different from that Patriots game, because you saw the way it was going.
You and Shazier and a bunch of other guys have convinced me. But
they was feeding Le'Veon, and Le'Veon was getting positive yards. As soon as Le'Veon was hurt, it kind of took the wind out of the Pittsburgh Steelers, point-blank period. You could just tell. So I think if Le'Veon can stay healthy postseason, hopefully the Pittsburgh Steelers will get to the postseason. But if they do encounter the Patriots – I think with a healthy Le'Veon, Martavis is back. We all know AB is just going to be AB. And I think Juju is going to have some kind of contribute. I think McDonald down the line, the tight end there got from San Francisco, he's going to have a good impact on the team. But that's later on down the line. But the key for the Pittsburgh Steelers is, and we said this yesterday, Shaq, got to still feed Le'Veon. Them 3rd-and-2s.
That's what I want to talk about. Okay, explain this to me. Fine. Dave doesn't really understand. Ike does understand. All right, so I'll defer to you. 3rd-and-2. Any short yarded situation, as it was in Chicago on Sunday. Steelers down 3. They're at about the 15 or 20 of Chicago. 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. 3rd-and-2. They line up in the shotgun. I know that it's in vogue. Nobody goes directly under center anymore. But why not just put 7 right under center, turn around and hand the ball to 26, not once but twice? What am I missing? I'm not one of these Todd Haley's out of his day. You know, I think Todd Haley knows what he's doing. But why? What am I missing? Why do you not use the most dangerous weapon in the NFL or one of?
Well, sometimes I think you can get too cute for yourself as an offensive coordinator. And I would love to see 7 under center. Even though you like, all right, 7 might be our best player when the ball is in his hands. I get it. He's going to give us options. But I'm going to reflect back to the San Diego game, the last play of the game. Who you gave the ball to in San Diego? Le'Veon Bell. And you knew, the whole world knew Le'Veon Bell was getting the ball. Le'Veon Bell had his will and the offensive line. They needed to score to win the ball game, and they did. Same thing in Chicago. I don't care if you know I'm running the ball.
What's anybody going to do? 2 plays, he's not going to make 2 yards?
I don't care. I got a nice offensive line. I still have options. I can fake it off to Le'Veon and run a
That's
bootleg.
The point. This thing of like going empty backfield while 26 can flank out, that's a great option.
A play action pass.
Right.
I still have options under center. So
they're taking away that threat for the defense.
Don't take away that threat when you have a Le'Veon Bell in the backfield, because all he do is gain yards. He's one of the most dynamic. Not only dynamic, he's very effective with yards after contact guy.
So true. He never along with he never fumbles.
Correct.
The other thing he does, he never gets a minus. He always falls forward.
Right. It's going to take 2 or 3 guys to get Le'Veon down, and you just see it week in and week out. I just think sometimes, you know, as offense coordinators, and not saying nothing to Coach Ty Haley, nothing bad about Coach Ty Haley. It's just, and we got to understand too, he have a lot of weapons that he can.
It feels like too many. Yeah. Like they don't know what to do. We have an embarrassment of riches right now.
I'm not going to say embarrassment or too many. You still got to understand this offense generates through Le'Veon Bell, point blank period.
All right. So there we go. I mean, I wanted to do some of that Steeler talk, and we would be remiss if we didn't also mention league-wide it happened, but the Steelers are particularly interesting display of first right amendments. The Steelers decided to stay in the locker room, but then did they? They were in the runway while Alejandro Villanueva, a great Patriot, of course, an Army Ranger, and beyond, he goes out there for it. Now on Monday, we hear Roethlisberger didn't feel comfortable with it. Anyway, what would 24 have said on Sunday morning, Saturday night, whatever? What would your opinion have been to the team? Here's what we should do on Sunday when we go out there.
Well, you know, it's a tough decision on Coach T, because Coach T got to, you know, ask his captains what they want to do. So I would have asked Alejandro what he thought would have been respectful, because the man did three tours, mm-hmm. you know. But people got to understand, like, and I get what Seven is saying, Seven meaning Big Ben, but at the same time, this man got two band of brothers. He had a band of brothers doing the three tours, and he got a band of brothers also in the locker room. Mm. So his band of brothers, he's showing his band of brothers homage and respect. Because he could have just walked out on the field. He stepped out of the tunnel. They were in the locker room. They were in the tunnel. So he was just paying homage to his first band mm-hmm. of brothers. And I think everybody in that locker room understood that his second band of brothers, his football locker room team, they understood that. But when you got a guy who's in war three times and getting all kind of accolades in the wars at 6'9", I clown and say he's 6'12", man, that man is a big target. When you want to talk about chopping down a tree, going over there for war, that's an easy target. Easy target. And this guy, just to risk his life on the line.
I mean, listen, know, he saw, I talk it. About band of brothers, he saw people underneath that flag. You know, he saw people buried underneath that thing. And so I get where he's coming from, but I also equally support Colin Kaepernick and everybody else.
You're disrespectful to the flag if you burn it. You're disrespectful to the flag if you let it hit the ground. You're disrespectful to the flag if you spit on it. And I think one of our colleagues,
but none of those things are illegal.
One of our colleagues said it best. You kneel on one knee when you're asking your fiance to be your wife. You kneel on one knee when you go down and pray. So all of a sudden, it's an issue because he gets on one knee for the anthem, and that's very disrespectful. Nah, again, if you ask anybody in the military, they say that's what they fight for. They're not saying they might agree with it, but they're saying that's what we fight for. You have that option to do that or not.
That's right.
So I think we just getting out of hand with this flag personally in my position, and I can understand where Alejandro is coming from. He just have two sets. He just have two sets band of brothers. So I totally get it.
Me too. I mean, that's right. I, you know, that's exactly. A lot of people misconstrue where I come down because I say it's your right to take a knee if you want to. And people then tweet me, oh, then you must have hated what Villanueva did, right? No. No. I equally support that. That's what I support.
Tim Tebow did it best.
What I don't support.
Nobody said nothing about Tim when he was.
Free speech is the only thing to go a little bit deep
right.
on it is. The only time free speech is dangerous, the reason I don't believe in absolute free speech is when you are supporting fascism like we saw last month. You know, that kind of stuff, what that swastika has come to mean is fascism. And what fascism is about is repressing free speech. So if you allow the free speech to say, I support fascism, what you're supporting is ultimately the end of free speech. That's the only loophole in there. That's what I don't support. Outside of that, whatever you feel, you're more than welcome to say.
You only say and feel what you're taught.
Also a fair point. Yeah, rarely does somebody form a new opinion.
But to be in a locker room with guys from all over the world, different religions, and that's what I don't get, Shaq. Like, how you just go into – you can go into one stadium, and it doesn't matter where you're from. It doesn't matter what your name is. It doesn't matter the color of your skin. It doesn't matter what your religion is. We can all cheer and embrace one team that we love in one stadium. We can all come together as fans if you're rooting for that team.
I sincerely and unironically say that's what's great about sports.
And then when we leave, we divide. Mm-hmm. That's what I don't get. I can't understand.
You're too young to remember. In 1980, when the U.S., I mean, hockey wasn't and still isn't the most popular sport in America, but when the U.S. beat the Soviets, that rallying at a tough time in America was huge for this country. I saw
the show.
Yeah.
I saw the show because they were the favorite. The U.S. wasn't the favorite.
No, right.
You know, they were the underdogs, and they wound up winning, and it brought the country together. So I think it's two things that bring people together and get them all riled up, and people are very emotional about. My perspective, music and sports. You listen to some songs, it might hit you, it might touch you, you'll cry. When you're crying, either the team is losing or you're celebrating the championship because you're proud in the inside. So I think, you know, between music and sports, you know, those two bring a lot of people together. But me being a former professional athlete, it just opened my eyes up to all kind of creeds of life in that locker room.
Yeah, I keep hearing that over, and that is true.
For me, I can't discriminate. There's no way. And my wife is Caucasian, and my son is a mixed baby. So when he gets older, he's going to have to understand too. So I got the best of both worlds. I feel like as a kid, he has the best of both worlds, but it's gonna come a time where, you know, he's going to have to see racism either on my side or his side or his mom's side, one of the two.
I'd like to do a whole show about this, but all right, we'll cut it off there and continue with football. Real quick, give me a pick, Steelers, Ravens.
At the Ravens, I think we talked about this. They always split, so I can see Pittsburgh winning at the Ravens, but for some reason, the Ravens come to Pittsburgh and they get them back.
I would like to see. So off the top of my head, it feels like it's always a split over the season.
For some reason, it's a split.
Wonder how often either team has swept the
home last time we swept, we played them three times. You remember?
And oh, it's the year you won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, we beat them all three times.
That's the San Antonio at the goal line play where you looked at it a million different ways and couldn't see if it was in there.
Correct.
Just remember, I say it over and over again. I'm going to say it again here and now. The Steelers are named after the people who forged the steel that won America and the free world, WW2, against the Nazi scourge. Right. That's what the Steelers are named after. The Ravens are named after an Edgar Allan Poe poem. Poe is a New York native who moved to Baltimore at the end of his life, got drunk, and died.
Right.
All right. So
how you feel.
That's how you want to make your decision. Go ahead. I think that the choice is clear.
Okay.
Be on the right side of history. Right. I'm riding with you, Ike Taylor, wherever trouble awaits. Okay. I want 24 by my side. In fact, if you could stand in front of me. Because I'm not going to be very good in a conflict.
Yes, you is. I got you. about time somebody get in an argument with you, they'll be falling down. You ain't even got to worry about it.
I like the sound of that. All right. There he is, number 24. Make sure you're checking him out every Monday night. He does game. It really is the NFL's version of the Charles Barkley post-NBA show.
You got your segments on there, right?
The Check Report. Anyway, the great Ike Taylor, everybody. Make sure you check him out. He's all over NFL media doing fashion popo with his pal Maurice and so on.
Dave, dee da 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 don don Dave.
There he is, 24. Always fun to catch up with him. Back now with Maurice and the Wolf, and it is time for our beloved weekly Q&A. I felt like music was going to play there or something. I don't know why I thought that.
Wow.
Just hum something when I say that. Q&A.
Oh.
All right, great.
With the rhythm over there.
Applause. All right, let's start it off. This one comes from Xavier in the Twin Cities.
Hey, this is Xavier Rose for the Minnesota Vikings, and I have a question for you. Is pineapple on your pizza okay or no?
In advance of our collective visit up to the Twin Cities for the Super Bowl, I hope I'm not going to find any pineapple on my pizza. Those people up there don't seem like the type who would ruin
it. It's too cold to do that.
That's a good point. Yeah, it doesn't feel like that.
It's frozen pineapple.
Right. For me, before I went vegan, right?
You're still on that?
I'm serious.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to go forever, too.
Well, it's because he's willowy now. He's bragging on veganism.
See that?
Oh my God. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. Anything on pizza except for anchovies was like perfect for me. Mm. I couldn't do anchovies. But anything else, I can do it.
I love pizza so much. You could put a flip-flop on it and I would eat it. I don't care. Oh. Pineapple, whatever.
What about a tank top?
Sure. I love pizza.
Take me that back down.
What about a man with a tank top eating a pizza?
What?
What if there was a man's foot in that flip-flop?
Okay.
Would you still eat that? Now it's getting dicey, isn't it?
Yes. Nah, yeah, I would probably draw the line right there.
Here's the thing with pineapple pizza. I've considered this for many moons now. That's fine. If I live in a free society, if you want to put the thing for me is just don't call it pizza. because now you've turned it into something different now. Now it's got produce on it and all the, you know, that sweet.
Pineapple's sweet. Yeah, it's a sweet.
Yeah, it's a fruit, but so is a tomato.
Nah, all right.
Is it a fruit? I thought it was a vegetable.
It's a fruit.
Don't call me on any inconsistencies in my logic here. Just call it something else. Call it like pineapple or pizapple or I don't know. Then I'll be okay with it. But as a general rule, no. I'm a traditionalist.
Are you a pineapple hater across the board, or you just don't like the two together?
Au contraire. The Shecky Award winner for best fruit.
Oh, that's right.
3 straight years was the pineapple. In fact, it got to be so dominant in the early part of the 21st century, I legitimately thought about retiring the granddaddy of all categories. But then
the
Honeycrisp made a hard charge, and it's back in. Now the red grape is having its time.
What about the green apple? The green apple is like one of the best.
Yeah.
Am I the only one that eats a green apple?
Honeycrisp is definitely like
unfollowed
up there.
What?
A green apple candy is delicious.
Apple, you have an apple right there going across.
That's a Honeycrisp.
And what color is that apple?
It should be green, not that color. Is that a Honeycrisp? It's like
it's the best. I don't even eat any other apples besides Honeycrisp.
Is it like it's like a red and a yellow one? Or
yeah, kind of.
It's like mixed.
Yeah.
It's a green apple. It's because of a green apple.
Green apples
are sometimes too soft.
No way. What green apple? What are you eating?
Or maybe that's the yellow ones that are like.
The yellow ones are too soft.
Yeah, yes. I don't like those.
Just as I say about, by the way, the most overrated fruit is the pear. And then the worst of all fruit is the pomegranate. This
so
arrogant.
Difficult.
It was so arrogant. You know, the pomegranate. Like, hey, we got this hard skin around you. Like, it's about as tough as a helmet, football helmet. Somehow you have to find a way with a hacksaw to get into the thing.
It gets all over the place.
Then you do.
Messy.
Oh, do I make sure you don't squeeze one of those little things? Oh, it stains your clothes. Like, and after all that, it makes your teeth feel all chalky and weird. Like, well, who wants a pomegranate? But it's like, it's National Pancake Day on Tuesday. And as I've said before, in a world that includes waffles, why would anybody choose to eat a pancake when you have the nice little little syrup cup to hold your thing? That's a waffle. That's for you. You have low self-esteem if you eat a pancake. Same thing.
Well, I must have low self-esteem because I love pancakes.
I don't dislike them if I don't have waffles as an option. But if you say waffle,
chocolate chip pancakes,
waffle. That's my answer to that.
Let me say this: next week we need to get all the fruit here, mm-hmm. and we need to just try them out.
Okay, I'm not opposed to that.
Just because I'm disgusted that the green apple doesn't have enough respect here.
I would love to do that.
You know what I say about, like I was leading to, in a world that has red apples, you have to have low self-esteem to choose the green one. Yeah, give me the one that isn't finished yet. Yeah, give me the one that isn't done yet.
That's a premature apple.
The green apple is finished.
No.
I was
It needs
raised,
another week of in the my, oven so,
so
it gets
me,
nice and
let
red.
Let me tell you this. My grandmother had an apple tree in her backyard.
Really?
And we would go pick them. They're green apples, right? And she would cut them up, and we'd make apple chips out of them. And you'd throw a little salt on there.
Oh, this is so sweet.
It's a sweet story. It doesn't make them taste good.
Oh, my God. The apple chips to the green apple? I wouldn't eat for weeks because I would cry because I wanted the apple chips. And the tree, it'd be wintertime and there'd be no apples on the tree.
You're caught up in your feelings, as you like to say, Maurice. You have some nostalgia that's bleeding into your taste buds.
You're not going
to
talk about my grandmother's apple tree like that. I'm not going to have that today.
Where's my axe? I'm going next stop. I'm chopping that tree down.
No way. She didn't even sell the house because I love the apple tree so bad.
Really?
I promise you.
Now,
still has the same house.
Pro tip.
Won't sell it.
So sweet.
Pro tip. Take a little cinnamon sugar. Sprinkle that on your green apple. Now we're getting a little closer to edible.
That's delicious.
Let me tell you, back then, we only had salt and pepper. Just want to let you know. Knew nothing about cinnamon and other things and greens you put on. Just to let you know.
Cinnamon was too fancy.
It was too fancy for us back then.
For the Jones-Drew house. All right. There you go. I hope that helps you, Xavier.
Yeah.
An informative conversation there. Next up, here's our old pal Will, who lives in Orange County and hopefully will soon be wearing a pro football uniform.
Got a question. Last shot to win the game, would you take Shaq, Ben Wallace, or DeAndre Jordan?
Will Blackman, there he is. So
okay.
Shaq Fu, DeAndre Jordan, or Ben Wallace.
They're all terrible
shooters. Is it a free throw? Is it a free throw or is it just like in the paint?
I hope
they're awful at both
I hope it is.
Free throws and regular shooting.
I'm going to go with Shaq because I always love to see Shaq shoot with one hand because his hands were so big that he couldn't like he couldn't do that. He was like
– you know what, Maurice? As a matter of fact, people – you always hear that the way to make it, because that's exactly right. If you're Shaq, if you're this outsized human being, it's the same as me taking a golf ball and not throwing it up over my head by 5 feet or so, but trying to make it level. I mean, if you can follow what I'm talking about. That's a hard thing to do with a golf ball. Same thing for Shaq. When he puts his hands over his head, they're basically at the rim. They're about 10 feet up there. And now he's trying to throw a golf ball into the hole. That's a tough thing to do.
Yeah. It's like beer pong.
Right. Basically.
Oh, I hear you.
As I think I've made clear over the years, I don't know anything about what happens in school, what they tried to teach me at school. But physics indicates that, yes, you would like the ball to go up and then come down a little bit and land on the rim. It's a little softer. So the underhand thing
would work for all of them.
It would work for all of them, but do you buy where they are coming down, which is I would be embarrassed. I think I would look silly, ergo I wouldn't do that. Is there anything that's like, yeah, I might be successful as an athlete, but that's too embarrassing. I won't do it.
You know, in life, if you care what other people think, you're not going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that with the free throws of these three gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. Well, Shaq won 4 titles, but
his free throws were horrendous. Drake once
said, he could have been the greatest center of all time if he would have shot under.
Drake said it best. You know, his friends were trying to cop some Shaq at the free throws. If you know what I'm saying, he said that in that's a little Drake reference. I'll tell you about that.
I don't know what that means.
Anyways, sometimes you have to swallow your pride. You know, we all have to do it one day. We all have to do it sometime. And then for Shaq to do it, he would make it cool because he's bigger than the free throw, literally. And then figures, if he's bigger, like his name, if Shaquille O'Neal was like, you know what, I should have did this the whole time. He came out with a video of shooting underhand. More big men would do that.
That's true.
By the way, you know what's interesting is that we've seen in pro sports in the last couple of years that Shaq's impact in the late 20th century is now bearing fruit in human terms. There are a lot of Shaqs around now. And if you ask guys, are you named after Shaquille O'Neal?
Yeah.
The answer is yes. Not as many Kobes. I think that, it was a long wait to see who was the more popular guy.
Yeah.
But the early returns say it's Shaq based on the next generation of athletes. The Wolf, who's your choice out of this terrible Sophie's choice of shooters for the last game?
That's why I'm going with Shaq, because they're all bad options. Though I really don't know what kind of option Will Blackman is.
I'm going to tell you no.
Okay, so I'm going to go with the best player out of all of them, and that's Shaq.
I know. Ben Wallace would score 2 or 4 points a game, so he's Shaq would
but he'd
still
give you 1,000 rebounds.
Right.
He'd be like, you have 1,000 rebounds, 1 point. Like, how do you get 1 point?
I can already feel we're only a few years, and then Shaq got all fat at the end of his career. And
are you fat shaming Shaq?
No, well, he jumped from he got into one of those things where it was like he was on 17 teams in 2 years.
Yeah, that hurts you.
And he was a sort of a liability because he was clunky and he got to be like a punchline running up and down the floor. People are already forgetting in his prime, and forget about this Kobe jazz and Robert Horry hitting the big shots. All those things mattered, but Shaquille O'Neal was unstoppable.
Yeah.
Yes.
Unstoppable. All right, next question. This one comes from Martellus, who lives in the Green Bay, Wisconsin area.
Best football movie. What is it?
The Wolf. Best football movie. I have a good sleeper. I know it wouldn't be my number one, but I have a good sleeper here. Go ahead there, The Wolf.
I always feel like Jerry Maguire isn't really a football movie.
It is.
Because it's kind of more like a love story.
Wonderful script. That's
like a rom-com.
There's a lot of love in football, though.
That's true. So I'm kind of stuck between Jerry Maguire and Any Given Sunday.
Ooh.
Any Given Sunday is like a classic.
What is it with this? What have I missed about Any Given Sunday?
It's a guy's eyeball fell out in an NFL game. Like, that happens all the time.
No, it does not.
That does happen?
I'm so gullible.
Boy,
today.
Oh boy. You would think those broadcasters aren't doing a very good job if their eyeball's falling out and they don't even notice it.
All right.
Any Given Sunday to me
is like Ballers. it's fabricated and it's just
it's nonsense.
TV. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, okay. But I liked it. I just watched it when I was younger and I liked it.
I understand. My old man, who was a doctor, is one of those guys who watches Grey's Anatomy and is like, well, that would never happen. Like, right. All right, well, that's just playing for foolish drama. You can't really break down the diagnoses and what they're doing to save lives and that. Same thing. I'm not watching Any Given Sunday with that. It's just stupid, though, that Jamie Foxx, like the last play of the game when they're playing in – in Texas Stadium, I think they're on like their own 20, and he just scrambles.
That's why
like
so
78
good.
Defenders on the field who he has to defeat one by one every 5 yards.
It's
like
completely ridiculous.
I'll tell you the one scene that got me was when the female owner went in the locker room. Guys are just walking around butt naked. Like, there's no way that happens. Like, there's no way. And no, don't get me wrong. I've been in a locker room where there's women around. And guys are scurrying like little kids, like, oh my God, like,
is that true?
All the time. There's no one just walking around butt naked like that, like with the.
Wait a second. Wait a second.
That happened in your locker room?
Yeah.
Maurice, you played football for 13, 14 years where there was media walking around between UCLA and the NFL.
Yeah, but in the league, though, like in college, you had to be completely dressed before they.
Oh, that's an extra layer.
Hollis Thomas used to just go, like, put his leg up on his
yes,
seat and then just put lotion on. How is this? All
you have underwear on?
Nothing.
What happened in the Jaguars locker?
Well,
Ike Taylor brags about doing
well, that's
that
the thing, though. So
thing.
In Jacksonville, for some reason, like. I mean, like, I would always try to get dressed before I would go on because, again, you know, that's your brand. Torrey Holt, though. It's a different monster, and that's when I first realized, like, dudes actually do that. Because in Jack, like, most of the time, guys are trying to get dressed. Either they're trying to get dressed and get out of there, or they're trying to, you know, do their thing. Torrey Holt would take a shower, and he'd use a little hand towel to dry off, and he'd do his interviews in it with his little, and he'd be dry. And I'm like, Torrey, do you know they have bigger towels? Yeah, but I like to air dry first. I'm like, yo, you're out of – and he'd have like four or five of them, and he'd just be air dry. He'd be like, come on, let's talk. I'm ready to go.
Yes, like, that would happen.
I'm like, Torrey, come on. Like, come on. But as a player, you're like, Torrey, put some clothes on, man. You're right by the bathroom. Like, I'm trying to go to – it's unbelievable.
I suspect that the small-handed players are not probably inviting everybody to come over and talk to them as they air dry themselves.
I've never had such intense eye contact with people as I've had in locker rooms.
I guess each locker room is different.
Akbar Bajabiamila claims immodestly that there was a reporter who was quite fixated on Akbar yet he would not cover himself. But he claims that there was a reporter who fancied. I said, isn't that an uncomfortable moment?
Yeah.
If the reporter is not looking at it, not making eye contact with you, and
oh,
he said,
God.
Hey, he bragged on himself. He said,
Stop it.
You know what's so funny?
It's the most awkward scenario.
That's the
ever.
One thing. I guess it was just me going to a Catholic high school and then going to UCLA, where like broadcasting and media was prominent because the school, you know, obviously the school, but. Like, they used to teach us professionalism. Like, be professional in these situations because you have a job. And then, obviously, the reporters have a job. Then we have a job, you know, to express ourselves. You can't do those things. Like, I just never, to me, was one thing like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to walk around here butt naked. And hey, look
there
at
was,
me.
There was one
hey.
Player like, on the Eagles that would – he would get naked, and then he'd call my name out. And then – so I would turn around and look.
Riley Cooper.
No.
Ron Jaworski.
Definitely not. I'm not that old.
I'd like to think it was Jaws.
That's crazy.
Let's get one more in here. I think this is a pretty interesting question. It comes to us from Twitter. And Ryan, he asks, are NFL teams in 2017 bad, or are older teams glorified? I think that's an interesting question.
I don't understand it.
Ryan Landrin on Twitter. It's I get this completely because in the here and now, people, the cynic right now will say, and in fact, I said this a week ago, like, all right, well, I guess that Jags defense isn't all that great because they just had 37 or whatever right. hung on them by Tennessee. But when it's all done, they might have one of the great defenses of the 21st century. But when you watch week to week and you're lucid and you're tied to the present season, you see the warts and all. Like, but I, in our mind, here's a good way of putting it, Maurice. I once went back, and I think you can still do this on YouTube. Maybe not, but I love watching the original broadcasts of old games.
Oh, it's so much fun with the graphics and the music.
It's the best. And the first game that I had this experience with was Super Bowl 13. It's still, in my opinion, the greatest collection of stars in pro football history. It was the Cowboys with Roger Staubach, Tony Dorsett, Randy White, all those guys.
Wow.
And against the Steelers with Bradshaw and Mean Joe and Lynn Swan, everybody else. And early in that game, it's this greatest collection of Hall of Famers and beyond, you know, all these Super Bowls and everything else. And early on, Roger Staubach, it's like the give is to Dorsett. Dorsett goes around the right side. Oh, he slips and falls, like goes a yard and a half. His feet kind of slip out from under him. And Jack Lambert and Mean Joe just kind of touch him down. And like, that's the end of the play. It's like, oh, yeah, every time Hall of Famers touch the ball, if they played 20 or 30 years ago, didn't wind up with them dancing in the end zone. Like, they just had pedestrian plays. That's what you don't get. Like, if you watch Barry Sanders' highlights now, you would think, oh, he must have run for 40 yards every time he touched it.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you this. It's funny because you bring that up, because I kind of went through that. So my high school team just got inducted into our Hall of Fame in the high school, and so – they came out with this article saying that it was the best high school football team in America history, which was pretty awesome.
Wow.
It was pretty awesome.
That's awesome.
The number one school, it was 2001 De La Salle Spartans.
Right? No way. That's really cool.
Whoa. Yeah, and it was like one of the high school things. And people, like, we played some good teams. It was like, and we had a lot of guys
on that team.
So T.J. Ward was on that team. Matt Gutierrez, who played in Michigan, then played behind Tom Brady. Derek Landry, who went to Notre Dame, played with me in Jacksonville, played with the Eagles. I think you might have been there when he was with the Eagles, too.
I'm trying to remember. I don't know if I was there yet.
We had some guys.
She was busy talking to Hollis Thomas.
Right.
But
the thing is.
Eye contact.
Like, when people talk about it, because I go back to high school, I'm like, you guys would have never played with us. You would have never played with us. Because in my mind, like, it was we're the greatest, right? And so that's what happens as time goes by. You forget all the stuff where you messed up and all the bad plays. Mm-hmm. You remember all the big plays, all the things you did well. I mean, and then, you know, when my kids have kids, I'm going to be like, you know, your granddad was arguably the greatest of all time. He may not get the respect that he deserved. But that's kind of what happens. Those stories go down and they just get bigger and bigger.
I think, I mean, like, you know, obviously I'm beholden to the 70 Steelers, but I don't think that if you could, if you had a time machine that you could teleport the Steelers with Bradshaw and company to play, you know, I don't know, the New Orleans Saints right now. I think the 2017 Saints would destroy the 2017 Cleveland
what
Browns.
Super Bowl,
would shame
Shaq,
them.
Was that with the Cowboys? It was in the 90s. It was like the Cowboys versus the Steelers.
It's Super Bowl 30.
Who won that one?
January of 96. The Cowboys kind of – Neil O'Donnell gave it away.
So imagine this. I remember
– They had that game. They would have won that game.
Why did
game.
You have to do oh, this
no,
cause, to Shaq?
Because I have to – because I remember vividly going to my aunt's house watching it, and I thought whoever
I
got
there.
Whoever the cornerback was, and I think Adam Rank said it best on Twitter. I'll hit that in a second. Whoever that cornerback was, or Neil O'Donnell threw it right to him, the guy took it. I thought he was the best. Like, to me, that was Deion. I was like, oh, that got to be Deion Sanders, right, who did it. But no, it was somebody else.
It was the great Larry Brown.
Exactly. And
who made millions of dollars from your Raiders.
It happens all the time. But think about this. So in London, Adam Rank said, some young kid whose first time watching football in London probably thinks Blake Bortles is the best quarterback ever. Because it's your experience.
That's right.
Or Mercedes Lewis.
It's your experience at that given time, which kind of, you know, takes your view on football. So, yeah, a lot of these teams will be glorified when, you know, you know, Shaq and people that are, you know, that, around that age are talking about the 60s and the 70s and those type of things. Like, yeah, you're right, because that's what
I don't
remember.
Talk about the 60s. It's upsetting that you would do
I'm
that.
Sorry. I'll just keep it at 100.
That's fine. The Wolf, what do you – let's keep it more – let's just keep it to the 21st century and we'll wrap it up here. Forget the 70s or even the 49ers of the 80s.
No problem.
You took the greatest show on turf, mm-hmm. Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, that team, how would that team do against let's not say the Patriots right now. Let's say who's the Packers, the 2017 Packers against the 2000 – the 99-ish, whatever, L.A. or St. Louis Rams.
They would. The Rams would beat them.
Would beat them.
Bad.
Yeah.
Really?
Why do you say that?
Because the Rams had offense and defense. People forget their defense was pretty good, too.
And their defense never gets any love.
Yeah.
It's always just about the offense ever since and what they
I've
were
worked,
able to do.
Yeah, ever since I started working for the Rams, that's what people talk. Well, DeMarco Farr is the biggest one. They always say, like, we got them the ball back. We got turnovers. And then when you look at their stats, they're actually pretty good defense.
That must stink right. to me, on that defense.
They were also
just, like, everybody
they
else
were up 14 to nothing 3 minutes into every game, too. So
yeah.
It's part of the game.
Walk in a park for them.
So the Wolf. So you think so too? You think the Rams would win?
Yeah, I mean that team was so dominant, and that offense was able to just come out and school teams.
I like this question. That's interesting because it's not so far back where it's like, well, obviously Jack Lambert was playing at 215 pounds as a middle linebacker.
Right.
He wouldn't be able to match up with LeGarrette Blount at this. You know, he wouldn't be able to win that head-to-head.
And he probably worked another job too.
I don't know if he actually did, but
I'm just saying.
I do think maybe on occasion he would burn a nail on the sideline. I don't know if he actually would do that, but I do like guys that would do that.
I love the
in
old
the locker
footage.
Room.
Yeah, it's so great.
Woo! That first half was hard. Give me a beer. Matter of fact, make it a malt liquor. I need the extra weight for the second
half.
It's
like oxygen and cigarettes.
All right. A wonderful time as always. Thanks as always for making the time for us, the Wolf and Maurice. We appreciate
it. Of course.
Busy souls as you are. Again, make sure you watch Maurice, the power rankings.
That's right.
It's game day. I mean, it's Good Morning Football on Saturdays. The Pick'em Show.
Yeah.
The Pick'em Show on Saturdays. Make sure you check that out. Ram stuff.
All sorts of stuff.
Whatever.
That's
it's
great.
Enough already. It's a thin slice of heaven.